Welcome back to the fourth episode of the Advanced Sports Analytics Podcast. We've been on a bit of a hiatus recently, been really busy revamping the site, putting out some new MLB tools, and also developing really good PGA tools for the second half of the PGA season. But we're back on the pod. We are here to discuss the last major of the golf season, the British Open at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. We've got a really strong field in this tournament, and we're playing at a course that we don't really have any course history on. So I think it's going to be an interesting tournament where there's a pretty open field, a lot of really strong players, and no one guy with a really heavy edge over the rest of the field. I'm joined by Brandon Adams to discuss the DraftKings pool that we have to choose from and how we want to strategize for the British Open coming up. Brandon, I'll kick it over to you. I know we kind of want to discuss GPP-focused strategy here. So I'm curious to hear kind of how you're planning to start your build, what players you're looking at, how, you know, if you're looking for more of a top-heavy build or a balanced, more balanced lineup.
All right. Welcome, guys. So for this podcast and this podcast only, I want to sort of go to foundations and talk about general philosophies on lineup building. A cash game build is a pretty simple iterative process where you're looking for the guys that have the best pricing in the betting markets and getting as many of them in your lineup as possible, and then seeking to tweak the lineup to find a guy or a combination of guys that have slightly better pricing. I often talk with people who love golf fantasy, but they really don't understand why betting markets would be important to the process. Basically, in my view, golf odds are very, very good. It's a very big betting market, especially the player to win markets on Betfair. They're very, very liquid and very, very accurate. So you shouldn't be trying to outguess them. You should be trying to get information from the betting markets. And golf is a little bit of an unusual sport where it's very important to look at the odds very close to tee off time. So looking at the odds on, say, Tuesday is not especially beneficial because there's a strong tendency for the odds to change close to tee off. There are two big reasons why this is so. One, weather changes, and weather is important for golf. And two, the betting markets have evolved in such a way where most of the pricing and most of the betting is dominated by big betting groups. And they like to hold on to the information and the viewpoints they have for as long as possible and then bet when the markets are most liquid. And that tends to be in the few hours before tee time. So a lot of these groups are centered in Europe, and they often just hold on to their bets until the few hours before tee time and then bet. And you'll see the volumes on Betfair are largely concentrated in that last 10 hours and especially the last 3 hours. So if you're a cash game player, you're really giving up a lot if you're not waking up earlier, staying up later, whatever the case may be, and knowing exactly what the pricing is at tee time, because the odds are changing quite a bit around that time. So cash game build, it's an iterative process where if you have a choice between two players, A and B, in your lineup, and you see that B has better pricing to win and or better matchup pricing, you want player B, and you sort of tweak your lineup looking at all possible pairings and so forth and find the best construction. Tournaments are a different animal because everyone is paying attention to betting market pricing, and the players that have the best pricing in the betting markets relative to their DraftKings price will also have the highest ownership. So that negates some of their value. What you generally want to do in a tournament lineup is have one player that you think is going to win, and then have the rest of your lineup be the best remaining five guys conditional on your pick winning. So you could think about DraftKings pricing as including a win premium for the top guys. And as a result, as a generalization, you generally don't want to pay for the top golfer in a cash game lineup because they do have that win premium in there. The cash game lineup construction tends to be balanced in the absence of one runaway favorite who's, say, 6-1 to win the tournament. This is a week where the cash game construction is clearly starting in a balanced way. And almost undoubtedly, you don't want the top price guys in your cash game lineups. Now, a tournament lineup, it's very important to have the winner in there. So you want, let's say you're building 100 lineups. A reasonable strategy might be to have 15 lineups where you start with the assumption that Rory wins the tournament, and then you build the other five golfers around Rory winning the tournament, and then 15 lineups where you have Dustin winning the tournament, and then you build the rest of the lineup around Dustin winning the tournament, then 15 lineups where Justin Rose wins the tournament and build out the rest of the lineup as Justin Rose wins the tournament. Now, an important corollary is there's no reason to pay the winner premium twice in a tournament lineup. So just because you can fit in Koepka and Rahm in the same lineup does not mean you want to do that. In general, that's going to be a bad tournament strategy because they're both priced as possible winners. So generally, you want to have your lineup, this is my best tournament lineup conditional on Rahm winning, then this is my best lineup conditional on Koepka winning, and you want just one star in each tournament lineup, not two. I haven't done a formal study of the winning Millionaire Maker lineups or the winning Wildcat lineups, but generally speaking, you need six guys who all finish in the top 15. So you really need to crush it. You often need to have something like 1, 3, 4, 10, and 13, 15, like this kind of lineup. So the problem with the really stars and scrubsy lineups where you have, say, a Dustin and a Rory in the same lineup is that that's requiring you to go so far down in price that you're getting guys who have a very low probability of finishing in the top 15. So I think it works best to start your tournament lineups with the assumption, all right, this is a tournament lineup assuming this guy wins, and then build down from there with players that have a very live shot of finishing in the top 20. You really never want to have a player in your tournament lineups that's dead based on talent to finish in the top 20. You don't really want to have the pure punts. There's really just not a reason to go there. You're better off getting differentiation by, say, taking an 8,500 player that figures to be only 5-10% owned. So your tournament builds, they have to be differentiated, but in general, it takes less than most people think to be differentiated. The British Open, especially, it's a very big field, and you just need to make a couple of pivots. And it's worthwhile to remind our listeners that it does serve your interest sometimes to not spend the 50,000 salary cap, since in most data I've seen, more than half of the lineups do spend exactly 50,000. So you're getting some automatic differentiation by spending less than the salary cap. This is beneficial because if you're lucky enough to have the perfect lineup that wins the Fantasy Golf Millionaire Maker, you don't want to be splitting that top prize. So Stuart, with that long-winded intro to tournament strategy, I'll turn it over to you.
You know, that strategy of not going heavy on two guys with high win probability makes sense, just because, you know, they can't both win. How far down is kind of a reasonable amount to drop with your second player? We see in, you know, this player pool, we've got, I think, five guys above 10,000. Kind of how, let's say you are building around, say, one of those top three guys, Rory, Koepka, or DJ. Like, how far down are you looking to drop with your second guy? Or is spending, you know, on a guy you like in kind of the mid-nines excessive? Or are you really trying to stick around kind of between 8 and 9.5 with kind of your secondary plays?
Yeah, I think especially in this tournament, you're going to find these low 9,000 players being incredibly popular. They'll be popular in part because the top few golfers are priced especially high for this major, but also because with these low 9,000 guys, you're getting just a slight talent drop off and a big price drop off. So you're getting top 10 golfers that could easily win this tournament right there. And of course, in the 8,000, you also have premier golfers. So I expect the whole range from 8,000 to 9,500 to be especially popular. So I think there will be a tendency to push into the 6,000s, and it's fine to have a player or two in the 6,000s in your lineup, but you don't have to go there to be unique. I think it's fine if your build is one super premium guy, some very popular 8 and 9K guys, and then a differentiated 7K guy.
Okay, yeah, it makes sense. We have in recent weeks put together an optimization application that our subscribers can use, and we've applied that this week to the DraftKings pool, and we are seeing, I think, very few guys in that sub-7 range popping into our optimal lineups. And I do think that speaks to this notion of trying to find your horse that you want to go heavy on up top, and then really looking for players in kind of that 7 to 9, 7 to kind of low 9s range, and really just try to mix it up there, establish kind of a core of players that you like, and really just shuffle around there and kind of get variants through different combinations of those players. I think also shooting for spending below the 50,000 is an interesting approach to kind of secure or give yourself a better chance of getting unique lineups. So let's start at the top, though, the top tier of the DraftKings lobby. You mentioned paying attention to the betting odds on players and using that really as a guiding metric for selecting players. I'm looking now at golfodds.com, just seeing the odds we've got as of today, Monday night, And there is kind of this elite tier of Rory, DJ, and Brooks, who are all a bit ahead of the rest of the field. Rory right now is the odds-on favorite at 8-1. Brooks and DJ at 10-1. Are any of those guys really jumping out to you as players that you want to build around more than the others? I think Rory has kind of the home field advantage and just a great storyline coming into the tournament. It's unclear to me whether or not this is a good thing, if this is going to be a distraction for him coming into the tournament, and also how it's going to affect ownership. You know, if people are interested in really being a part of that Northern Ireland narrative. So are any of these three guys really jumping out to you as players you want to build around up top? And if not, are there any players kind of on the fringe, like, you know, John Rahm, maybe even Tiger, or Justin Thomas, that kind of you're considering building around as kind of your winning horse that you really like?
Yeah, for me personally, I will be overweight on Rory by a lot, even though he's going to be a very popular player. I think his betting price seems about right at 9.25-1 true odds. But if forced to choose bet or lay, I would bet it, I think. I also think that Rory has an interesting characteristic in DFS, where if you had odds of a player, say, winning the tournament by 5 shots or more, I can't imagine any of these players' odds are close to Rory's. Rory is much more likely than any other player. I mean, Kepka's in the same price range, but to me, Rory is much more likely than any other player to blow away the field in this tournament. And blowing away the field in a tournament is a really good thing for you in DFS, because it's not going to change your lineup's probability of winning the Millionaire Maker, because all of the lineups in contention are going to have that guy. But what it's going to do is, for instance, if you're Rory centric and you play 150 lineups, and let's say you don't have the lucky combination that's going to win the Millionaire Maker, having a winner who's not just a winner but a winner who blows away the field will make it likely that all of your lineups cash, or at least all of your reasonable lineups cash, and that has that has some pretty strong value as well. So I will tend to be overweight the very popular Rory. I probably will do 100 lineups or so in the Millionaire Maker. I almost always do my lineups by hand, even when I do a large number of lineups, which seems insane, but it's just the way that I do it, because I've spent a lot of time going over tournament lineups. And the problem with machine-generated lineups is that all of them look reasonable to the eye, but when you really examine how they stand up against like an optimal that you might generate if you're really putting your brain to work and generating the lineups, if you really look at how they stand up against a cross section of other slightly better lineups, they tend to do very poorly. A more concrete illustration of this is, let's say we're playing basketball DFS, and let's say, Stuart, that you have quite a lot of experience playing basketball DFS. Let's say you play someone from work who knows a lot about basketball, and let's also say that the person plays DFS pretty often. it's likely that your lineup is going to be, let's just say, an A-minus lineup on a given night. And his lineup is a B-plus lineup. Well, it seems that the A-minus and the B-plus lineup might be reasonably close to one another in terms of win probability, but sometimes the A-minus is like a 7-3 favorite over the B-plus lineup. And that's just because maybe they differ in three spots, but if looked at objectively, the 3v3, the worst 3v3 is a facing a steep uphill climb to beat the better three. So what's happening in a tournament is that if you have, let's say, 150 of your best efforts constructed by hand, and you can assume that much of the field consists of top DFS players putting in their best 150 lineups, their A lineups. When you look at 150 B plus lineups, the probability that the B plus lineups going against all the different variations of the A lineups, the probability of the B plus lineups coming out ahead is actually much smaller than you would intuitively think. And when I do machine generated lineups, when I look carefully at them, I'm like, well, that looks like a B plus, but I can see clear improvements on what on this lineup. And the concept of clear improvement, it's kind of nebulous because it involves a combination of what is your salary spend, what is the ownership of the players involved, what is the win probability. It involves a lot of things, but I feel like I can subjectively make an assessment, and the machine lineups look like B plus lineups to me. And I think the expected value of a B plus lineup versus an A lineup is much lower.
So I try to do everything by hand. A reasonable contrarian strategy is to start your lineup with the assumption that that someone who's unlikely to win is going to win. So let's just say Tommy Fleetwood. He's 38-1 to win. True probability. Now, 38-1 to win is actually reasonably likely, especially when we're putting it in the context of a millionaire maker where we're really trying to hit flash in the pan style lineups. So what I'll often do is build a lineup where I say, all right, okay, I'm going to build the best possible tournament lineup I can under the assumption that Fleetwood's going to win this week. So I plug in Fleetwood as the number one golfer. Now, there would be no reason, even though I could afford Koepka or Rory, there would be no reason to put Koepka or Rory in that lineup because there's no reason for me to pay the win premium on those guys when I'm saying this is a lineup based on the assumption that Fleetwood is going to win. So Fleetwood then will become my A golfer, and although Fleetwood himself might be popular, a lineup that has Fleetwood to win will look a little bit idiosyncratic because it's not going to include any of the top priced golfers. So the Fleetwood but no top priced golfers is actually going to be a rare combination. So you start with Fleetwood and then you build in premium mid-priced options around him as necessary to get your best Fleetwood lineup, and you do, let's just say, 10 of those. Then you do another one. Adam Scott wins the tournament. I'm going to build a lineup around that. Now, Adam Scott, he's less likely to win the tournament than Rory, but he's still pretty damn likely to win the tournament. He's still 1-33-ish to win the tournament. So you build a lineup Adam Scott wins the tournament, and what's the best build I can do around that? And that sort of guarantees contrarian builds that in my mind are very good tournament lineups.
Yeah, I'm very high on Adam Scott this week, and I think we'll probably take a couple shots building around him as a winner. I think he's one of the hotter golfers going right now. Above Adam Scott, kind of looking closer to the top, I'm really interested, and he's not really popping into many of our optimals, but his peripheral numbers are pretty good, and I'm surprised he's not showing up more. But just below 10,000, around the, at 9.9, Justin Rose, I think, is an interesting play. A guy who has good win potential is kind of below that top tier of, you know, most probable winners. And I don't know, I could see being somewhat contrarian this week. He hasn't been playing phenomenally lately. His short form it hasn't been great, but he does have a track record of doing really well on challenging courses. We don't know that much about Royal Portrush this week, but I'm expecting it to be a difficult major level course. And he's also really excelled against strong fields. So that's a guy there I think I'm interested in building around as kind of a off top price play that I think could yield some interesting kind of balanced lineups.
Yeah, I like that. So maybe a build 10 lineups or so where you start with the assumption that Rose wins, and then tend to exclude the other top tier guys and build a strong core of mid price golfers around Rose.
So looking now into that kind of middle tier, are there any other guys that jump out to you as players who have that win upside and you could be looking to build around? And if you are building around some of these mid-tier guys that you're kind of playing as your top golfer, are you looking for kind of more consistency and cut making ability with those other mid-tier prices, or are you also kind of looking for kind of 1 and 1A options where you have kind of a secondary mid-priced value guy that you think just could just as easily take down the tournament?
Yeah, I mean, you often want the guys that can take down the tournament. For me, I will tend to focus on guys that have the clear underlying talent and also have the proven win ability. So you take a guy like Gustason. He's interesting because he has that high volatility, and you could easily see him winning. I like Spieth as someone who could surprise and win on a tournament on a course like this. I tend not to like someone like Kuchar because I think of him as the guy that is there around 10 but doesn't win. So when I see guys like Cabrera Bello, DeChambeau, Matsuyama, you think finish right up there but not win. And when I see guys like Schauffele, right now that's more of a field play, but it kind of seems like Schauffele may be ready to break out. I think of him as being a possible winner. Justin Thomas, could you see him winning by a few shots, of course? Molinari feels now more like that 10th place guy.
Fowler, possible winner. Jason Day, possible winner. So those are the mid guys that I would like to try to build around. And again, I think it's very important for a tournament lineup. If you're taking, say, Spieth as your winner, then what you want is from the rest of your guys, maximize the probability that all of the rest of the guys finish in the top 15. And usually to do that, you don't want Spieth plus Rory. Usually you want Spieth plus five other guys that all have very strong betting odds and strong implied odds to finish in the top 20.
And moving down now to kind of the lower tier of players, you've expressed an interest in trying to stay kind of out of that 6K range, but are there any guys in the 7K range that are drawing particularly high interest for you? I know one guy I've been looking at is Patrick Reed, who has kind of that big tournament potential that we've seen from him in the past, and he has been running hot lately, and has again shown a track record of being a guy who performs well on challenging courses. Not sure what you think about the pick there, or if there are any other guys kind of in that 7 to low 8s range that you're really seeing as kind of bottom of your roster guys that you can still plug in and feel like you have that chance of getting a top 10 or a top 15 finish out of.
Well, I am more betting market centric than most. So what I'm doing for those high 6K and low 7K guys is, as the tournament is getting close, and it's worthwhile to look at the betting odds now, but it's kind of important to cluster your process around first tee time. As times are getting close, I'm really paying careful attention to these player to win markets. Betfair is a very good one because Betfair is the most liquid player to win market. So I'm looking at it and I'm seeing, okay, which guys have high probabilities of winning for this 6K, high 6K, low 7K prices. And the numbers will often seem all somewhat near each other, but there's a big difference between a win probability of like 170 to 1 and a win probability of 400 to 1. And you really want to find those guys that have the unusual win probabilities. And just to give you an idea of just how liquid these markets are, it's Monday now. And just to take one example, Thomas Peters, the market for him to win is you can lay him at 270 to 1, or you could bet him at 260 to 1. So that's a very tight market, right? And the fact that you can bet him currently at 260 to 1, if you wanted to right now, you could bet $1,600 on him to win and get 260 to 1. So that means that someone or some combination of people is willing to take the other side of that, where they're risking $400,000 on him not winning. So that's a very, very large market, and there's some really good information that's going into these prices. And this is really where you should be anchoring your attention. So you go down and you see guys that are jumping out. Reed looks pretty good. Ian Poulter, not unusually, has a pretty decent win probability. Then you look at guys that are sort of outliers the wrong way, like Danny Willett, no betting market attention. He's not a guy that you would want. Snedeker, Westwood, Peters himself, reasonable win probabilities. You look at someone like Jim Furyk, wouldn't touch him based on the market's assessment. Keegan Bradley, wouldn't touch him. Bubba, when a high variance golfer like Bubba has a very very bad betting market price, like in this case 390 to 1, you really don't want to don't want to be there. Then there are some guys that are kind of surprising, like Grillo. Usually, even in a tough field like this, he would have some kind of betting market support. He doesn't really here for 10-1. And yeah, like if you compare this major from your typical major, I would say they're giving the bottom half golfers, or in DraftKings terms, they're giving the under 7K golfers a much lower win probability than they would usually have. So I would say, like, if you summed the win probability of all the sub 7K golfers in the U.S. Open, it would be significantly higher than it is for this tournament. It's just the betting market is not supporting these third tier golfers at all, really, in this tournament. And I can't say what it is about the golf course that makes that so, but the betting markets are saying that relative to your typical major, for whatever reason, the middle of the pack is getting more support. The middle of the pack has a higher win probability than usual. So if you say the golfers that are ranked between, let's say, 7 and 27 have much higher win probabilities than normal. And then the golfers that are 30 and worse have much worse win probabilities than normal. Your top guys, about your typical, it looks quite similar to, say, U.S. Open win probabilities.
Well, yeah, those odds will certainly be something to keep an eye on as we move closer to tee time. I've alluded to this optimization algorithm that we've recently rolled out in the last month or so, and just this week we actually added in win odds as a predictor of the algorithm, and I think that'll be a really good add because, like you said, it's just so indicative of outright win probability. So I'm pretty excited to see kind of how that performs this week.
Other sites, by the way, use betting market data, but they use it poorly. They pull their betting market data from the wrong places. It's very important to use betting market data that, first of all, is has the VIG stripped out of it. And second of all, wherever possible, you want some very liquid betting pools. So the ideal is to wait until the Betfair market has some liquidity, which in this particular tournament already has a lot of liquidity now, and then just take the middle price at that point and then translate it into win probability. But a lot of the models they use, like, they're pulling the VIG price from American sports books, and they're just very, very bad and noisy data.
All right, cool. Well, I think it's going to be an exciting tournament. There's really an open field, and I think a lot of different ways the tournament could shape out. And certainly with Irish weather, like, there's kind of some uncertainty there. So I do think, as you mentioned, paying attention as lock approaches is, I think, going to be really important. And I think it should make for a really entertaining tournament. It's a really strong field, and I think there's a lot of different ways you can go. So best of luck to everyone this weekend. Hope you guys have a good and profitable weekend.
All right, thanks, guys. Let's get that million.